This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Adam Hochberg. A federal judge yesterday heard arguments on the state's controversial law known as HB2. That's the law that requires people to use public bathrooms based on the gender listed on their birth certificates. It also preempts local non-discrimination ordinances. Supporters say it's necessary to maintain public safety. Opponents say it unfairly discriminates against LGBT people. Judge Thomas Schroeder didn't rule yesterday, but is expected to decide soon. Winston-Salem Journal legal affairs reporter Michael Hewlett has been following the story and joins me now. Welcome, Michael.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Let's talk first about the issue at hand in yesterday's hearing. As we understand it, it was a hearing to stay the law, to keep it from being put in place until a full hearing can be held in November about the law's constitutionality. Can you briefly recap the arguments the two sides made yesterday?
Yes, you're correct. It was a motion for what they call a preliminary injunction. The plaintiffs in the case, which includes the ACLU, who represent several plaintiffs, including a high school student at the School of the Arts here in Winston-Salem, they basically argued that keeping the law in place would cause irreparable harm to transgender people. They said that transgender people often have now, under the law, have to make a choice on, you know, either harming their physical and mental health or using the bathroom. In some cases, plaintiffs have to go 20 minutes out of the way. One plaintiff was told that he has to go down a service elevator into a basement to use a single occupancy bathroom. The state said that that they are simply reaffirming the right to privacy, that there have always been separate bathrooms for men and women, and they don't want the possibility of someone, a man pretending to be transgender, going to a woman's bathroom and possibly sexually assaulting someone or exposing themselves in a bathroom that's supposed to be an intimate, safe space.
So the hearing yesterday was just on the bathroom issue, even though, as we know, HB2 does a lot of other things with respect to non-discrimination and discrimination.
Yes. It was only on the bathroom issue. As we all know, HB2 also prevented cities and counties from passing their own non-discrimination ordinances that would have provided legal protections to LGBT communities and included a statewide discrimination ordinance that excluded LGBT people. In this, the issue was essentially bathrooms. Judge Schroeder had a lot of questions, particularly of the state, as to why there was a need for the law. The plaintiffs had argued that that transgender people have been using bathrooms aligned with their gender identity for a number of years without incident. HB2 was essentially a law that created a problem and created a solution in search of a problem.
And the judge zeroed in on one of the paradoxes of HB2, which is that, you know, the legislature rushed into this emergency special session to address what they said was the great threat to privacy and safety, and yet on the other hand, the law itself has no penalty and no enforcement mechanism.
That's correct. There was a exchange between Schroeder and Butch Bowers, who's the attorney for Governor Pat McCrory, and Bowers basically provided a scenario of a man dressed as a woman going to a woman's bathroom, and Schroeder asked him, what's the chance of that person exposing himself since there are stalls and not urinals? And then Schroeder asked him, well, are there any kind of enforcement mechanism? And Bowers said, no, there's not. And he also said that transgender people probably will be continue going to the bathroom aligned with their gender identity even under HB2. And that's when Schroeder asked, well, then why have the law?
Could you get a sense from those questions or any other questions what direction the judge might be leaning?
It's still hard to tell. Schroeder is a conservative judge. He was appointed by George W. Bush, and he upheld the state's new election law this past April, which was essentially overturned by the Fourth Circuit. So it's kind of hard to tell. He will likely issue a decision within a month. He had other questions for the plaintiffs, but it did seem like he had a healthy amount of skepticism about why the state passed this law, if there's no enforcement mechanism, if there are other laws such as indecent exposure, trespassing that someone could be charged with, if you have a situation of a man dressed as a woman going into a woman's bathroom, and also wondered why the law was necessary if there had not been any evidence of incidents.
Michael Hewlett, the legal affairs reporter for the Winston-Salem Journal. Thanks for joining us, Michael.
No problem. Thank you.
The HB2 case is one of many court challenges in the past couple of years that have sought to strike down new North Carolina laws, and several of those challenges have been successful, including one that resulted in a federal appeals court last week striking down one of the Republican legislature's signature accomplishments, the election law that required voter identification. We're now joined by Wake Forest Law Professor Harold Lloyd to talk about that case. Welcome to the State of Things, Professor Lloyd.
Thank you, Adam. Glad to be here.
We're trying to keep a list here of the laws passed by the Republican legislature that have now been overturned by the courts, and the number's a little different depending upon how far back we want to go in time, but we're up to about a half dozen now. What's going on with all of these state laws that the legislature passes and then the courts strike down?
I think that there are a couple of things at least going on here, and then we can come back and talk about the law itself if you wish in the time we have left. I think that we see a process here where the one party is completely in power. They have implemented a strategy where they often create this illusion of an emergency or rush. They rush through legislation without adequate debate, and it doesn't stand scrutiny. And going back to HB2 is a classic example of that. Even if we thought that something needed to be done in Raleigh, the legislature met on March 23rd. The Charlotte ordinance did not go into effect until April 1st. And I'm not a mathematician, but the way I count it, that's 8 days. You know, they had 8 days just from that 23rd date, which they picked, to debate that bill. And if the governor didn't like provisions in that bill, he had 8 days to veto it and to try to get a better bill. That bill did some additional things which weren't mentioned earlier. It struck our state law right to bring claims for employment discrimination, which of course has nothing to do with bathrooms.
And that has now been restored.
Well, not exactly. A law has been passed which put a lot of it back, but before we had a 3-year statute of limitations, and now we have a 1-year statute of limitations. And sex discrimination claims are now going to be tied up with birth certificates, because that's how that is defined in the statute. So what that has done, that has still taken away rights from workers, and it's created confusion in the area of sex discrimination. The bill did other things, too. I mean, we don't have time to go through all the things that it did under the guise of bathrooms, but it also took away the right for local municipalities to govern child labor and minimum wage if they thought in their locations there was a particular child labor problem. They no longer have the right to address that locally.
Let me push back a bit on this idea about a reckless legislature that's passing laws in a hurry. What the legislative leadership would say and what they have said is, no, we're doing the work of the people, and what we have is a liberal activist judiciary. We've seen that statement many times from Phil Berger, from the Speaker of the House, Speaker Moore, from Governor McCrory. What's your response to that?
My response to that is a deeper response, and this is something I want to struggle with and try to figure out. We need to change this notion that the law is this mysterious realm that only lawyers can understand. Ordinary people can understand it if we just point them to the text and we guide them. And when we do that, those sorts of arguments by Berger and Warren McCrory are not going to stand up. Like on my Huffington Post page, I posted a redacted or abridged version of the NAACP versus McCrory case, anyone can read that.
And that's the vote. We should say that's the voter ID case.
Right. That's the, well, and but I would say that's the voter regulation bill because, again, it did much, much more than voter ID. It eliminated out-of-precinct voting, pre-registration, same-day registration, early voting. It did that based on racial data that the legislature had ordered to see which of those mechanisms blacks use more. And it also keyed the photo ID part to forms of ID that blacks use more. And it ignored, according to the court, there was no evidence of in-person voting fraud, but there was evidence of mail-in ballot fraud. But mail-in ballot fraud, their data showed, was used more by whites. So that was ignored. That's still permitted.
So that's where the judges in the Fourth Circuit got the idea that the legislature cherry-picked specific provisions of the law to target specific groups of voters and make it harder for them to vote. Harold Lloyd, law professor at Wake Forest University. Thank you, Professor Lloyd.
Okay, thank you very much.
This is The State of Things, and just ahead, we'll be talking with a North Carolina writer about crafting a career in the military into fiction. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.